Hey, welcome to this episode of Light 'Em Up. We take a deep dive on the criminal justice system, crime scene investigation, and leadership. We enlighten, educate, and empower others with the truth. Like it or not, the truth disturbs, the truth divides, but ultimately, the truth delivers. Hey, I'm your host, Phil Rizzo. I'm the principal owner of Rizzo's Protective Group. We are a high-risk security consulting firm headquartered out of Akron, Ohio, and with offices in the Bronx, New York, and Cerro Alto, the Dominican Republic. Hey, as we put the ball on the tee to line things up for kickoff, we speak life, health, and prosperity over each and every one of you, and we want to thank you for joining us. Hey, we are thrilled to be back in studio with Dr. Sandy Womack Jr. Dr. Womack is the Region 3 Area Superintendent of the Columbus, Ohio School District. That's the largest district in the Buckeye State of Ohio, and a lifelong educator with 30-plus years of experience. Hey, Dr. Womack, welcome back. Welcome to Light 'Em Up. We're so glad to be in studio with you.
Thanks, Phil. It's good to be back, man. Looking forward to our conversation.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we appreciate your time. And because of that fact, we're going to dive right in. So how about it? Let's tap the clutch and let's shift gears a little bit. And let's drill down on our topic, which is going to be CRT tonight. And a poll taken in late 2021 found that 7 out of 10 Americans don't know what critical race theory is. I know from studying Malcolm X, he would often speak of the importance of having a knowledge of self, knowing one's own history. You have to have a knowledge of history no matter what you're going to do, no matter what it is, anything that you undertake, you have to have a knowledge of history in order to be successful in it. George Santayana said, "Those who fail to learn from history are doomed to repeat it." Now, if we have any hope of learning from our past, we need to talk more about our country's racist history, not less. Now, Malcolm X has been quoted as saying, "The thing that has made the so-called Negro in America fail more than any other thing is your, my lack of knowledge concerning history." He went on to say, "We know less about history than anything else." Again, for our listeners, these are his words, not mine. And he mentioned that there are black people in America who have mastered the mathematical sciences, have become professors and experts in physics, and have mastered the field of medicine, also mastered other fields as well. But very seldom do we have black men in America who have mastered the knowledge of the history of the black man himself. So my first question to you, straight out of the gate, was he correct? Was he correct then? And if he was correct then, is that still the case today?
Well, you know, Phil, I think one of the first things you have to do is put that into the context of the time period in which it was said. You know, Carter G. Woodson had once said in The Miseducation of the Negro that once you control the man's thinking, you no longer have to worry about his actions. I think what Malcolm X was saying at the time was that a people without knowledge of self is like a tree without roots. Just even in the Bible, it talks about the book of Hosea, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. They do not seek it. They do not want it. And as a result, they're destroyed." It's biblical verses and quotes. If you look in the book of Genesis, if you look in the book of Exodus, the book of Numbers, they always talk about the genealogy, who you came from, what is your lineage. And so therefore, you know your history. That's biblical, whether it be Abraham, who had Isaac, but also had Ishmael, who had Jacob and Esau, and Jacob had the 12 tribes of Israel. You know, I'm not getting deep into it, but what I'm saying is, in every book that you go through, the Bible even talks about a genealogy. And so as you know your history, you know from what you came, you know about your tribe's history, you know about your ancestry. And I think what Malcolm X was saying is very similar to what Carter G. Woodson was saying, is that once you control the thinking of the individual, you no longer have to worry about the actions. And so the example that I would give, Phil, is when you don't know who your father is, or you don't know who your grandfather is, or you don't know who your great-grandfather is, you don't know about the greatness from which you come. You don't know about the family history, the culture, the traditions. You don't know about the economic development. You don't know about the people who've done well in the family, those who haven't done well in the family. And so that's what I believe Malcolm X was saying about us as a people. We've been labeled to master mathematics, whether it be Benjamin Banneker and what he did in regards to designing the city of Washington, D.C., and also making the first working clock, or whether it be Dr. Daniel Hale Williams and the first successful open heart surgery in regards to medicine. George Washington Carver and what he did. So there are people in history who have been African American who've done significantly well in engineering. engineering and pioneering and things of that nature. But I think the situation that he was talking about is very similar to what goes on now. When you don't know who you are, then anybody can tell you. Yeah. And as a result of it, people are often, you know, thrown off course because they don't have a foundation. They don't have any roots. I mean, if you look at Henry Louis Gates and what he's doing right now, he's going back on the genealogy. Or what you have, 23andMe, mm-hmm. or you got such an ancestry DNA. People are trying to go back and find out, where am I from? Where were I formed? Who are my people? And it's something that I think is critical, because I work with kids on a day-to-day basis. And here's a question that constantly comes up. I ask the student in my office and the principal, hey, man, who is your dad? And I have kids who say, man, I don't even know my father. And I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. So that means there's a whole side of your family that you don't know. You don't know your grandmother. You don't know your grandfather. You don't know your aunties. You don't know your uncles. You don't know your cousin. And that's a deficit mindset and model, which makes it very difficult for that young man or that young woman to move forward, because they don't know who they are or where they come from. And therefore, that means they're wide open to anything that may happen. And that's what has happened to the mind, I believe, of a lot of not only African-Americans, as Malcolm X said, Negroes at the time, but it also impacts the mind of those who are in a position of authority, because they don't know what you've done as well either. So, yeah. You know, I was just in that right there, Phil.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Knowledge of self is essential. If you don't know where you've been, you will have no knowledge of forward progress, you know, so it's crucial.
Absolutely.
It really is. Dr. Womack, let's fast forward to today. I know we were talking briefly about Malcolm X, but let's jump fast forward to today. If former President Trump said that critical race theory, or CRT, was a destructive ideology, I know for certain that it can't be all that bad if he said that. So since January 2021, 42 states have introduced bills or taken other steps that would restrict teaching critical race theory or limit how teachers can discuss racism and sexism. And 17 states have imposed these bans and restrictions either through legislation or other avenues, according to Education Week. And in several states, racial equity trainings and initiatives have been halted or threatened as a result of this backlash. So do us a big favor and help us to understand. Educate our listeners. Simply put, what is CRT?
So critical race theory is something I actually used as an epistemology for doing my dissertation. And what critical race theory is there are a couple of people who have founded that. Dr. Derek Bell out of Harvard, Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw out of UCLA, and I think Kimberly's also working at Columbia as well. And what they said, it was a legal construct that would come up with from these two people, and there's a few other people who helped with it as well, that basically said this, and it was a legal construct. So it's an epistemology that you use as your foundation for your theory in regards to doing dissertation. And what they basically said is this, that we have laws, rules, and policies that have been set in place in the United States that have impacted African-American people economically, politically, and legally. And what they're saying is that those laws, those policies, let's say the 13th Amendment to the Constitution that ended slavery, or the 15th Amendment that gave everybody access to right to vote, we know that didn't happen that way. The 14th Amendment that gave due process. Or let's say we're talking about the Chinese Exclusion Act. Or let's say we're talking about the Japanese Indian Removal Act. They were saying that in this country, we have a history of legal policies that have impacted the ability of certain indigenous and marginalized people to improve economically, educationally, healthcare, etc. And they say they start as that as the foundation for where we are moving forward. So it's really just an epistemology that is used for dissertations based on legalese, stating there are laws, rules, policies, black codes, Jim Crow laws, etc., that have impeded the progress of African American people. And they're saying if we start there as a foundation, then we can move forward. We're not saying that these things are continuing today, but we're saying, but we cannot move forward if we don't acknowledge that you did have the Chinese Exclusion Act, that you did have the Japanese internment camps, that you did have the Indian Removal Act, that we did have slavery in this country. And it has impacted people's ability to move up and have upward mobility economically, healthcare, education. And so that was the epistemology created by Dr. Derek Bell and Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw, who also worked on intersectionality. But that's basically what it is. So it has nothing to do with us saying that, hey, we're going to talk about all of this negativity that is going on and you can't teach people about this and that. Man, that is a doctoral epistemology. Kids in schools aren't doing anything on that level, man. That's a graduate level concept.
I see.
You know, that's not going on in the public education system. That's not going on in the curriculum. That's American history. And they use it as an epistemology or a foundation in order to talk about, here are the laws, here are the policies, here are the situations that have taken place in this country that have impacted a group of people's ability to move forward economically, educationally, and legally with the criminal justice system because there were laws that have been put in place that impacted people in an inequitable way. That is what critical race theory is, man. No school is teaching critical race theory unless you're in a master's degree program or a doctoral program at a postgraduate level.
I see. Would it be a fair statement, in your opinion, to say that CRT backlash is rooted in fear and anti-blackness?
I think CRT backlash is rooted in exactly what you just said. You know, I think if you can eliminate a people's history, one of the main things about colonialism was this, and even imperialism, is that you take a people's religion, you take their knowledge of self, and, you know, you take their vocabulary. So with colonialism and imperialism, one of the things that you have to do in order to control the people is you take their history, you take their faith, and you take everything that goes along with their knowledge of self. And in doing that, those people assimilate to whoever took over in power. And so I think people are really trying to hold on to power field for a couple of reasons. 51% of the public schools right now are predominantly black and brown. You see a large growing Hispanic, African-American, multiracial population in this country. And those people in a position of power don't want to see this change. And you had the eugenics movement back in the late or early 1900s, like, hey, we need to do something in order to control this growth population of black and brown people. And I think people are beginning to see that the demographics of our country is gradually changing, and they're trying to hold on with any way they can. And by denying access to kids, you see what I'm saying? Babies.
Yeah.
To the information that will help them move forward, it impacts a political agenda because they don't know what they don't know. And as a result of it, if we can put this up under critical race theory, which is not being taught in any public school system in the United States of America, period. You know, I mean, DeSantis tried to have a couple conversations about what he wanted to do with the AP literature, African-American lit class, and what needed to be taken out and all of the above. And a lot of it was intersectionality, the things that Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw talked about. But ultimately, I think it's a way of what is control economic means, man.
Yeah.
How do we keep this dollar and this money coming into a population of people who have generational wealth versus people who are just now getting first generation, as they say, college graduates trying to get access to the American dream?
Absolutely. This is part B in our series of discussions with Dr. Sandy Womack Jr., and this is a Black History Month continuation. It's a short sojourn with Dr. Sandy Womack Jr. Dr. Womack, as we push forward, is it that the people behind the anti-CRT movement want us to believe that talking about systemic racism is the problem, not the systemic racism itself?
You know, that's a really good question, Phil. I would like to sit down in the arena with the people who are really pushing it. I've seen a few school boards who talk about anti-CRT, and I'm even watching what's going on across the nation in states like Virginia and Florida and Georgia and Alabama and, you know, even some of our Midwestern states that are really like, hey, we can't talk about this under this auspices. But, you know, we work in a system, man. We have an executive, judicial, and legislative branch of government. And our legislative branch of government is responsible, because you talk about this, for policy. They create policy. The executive branch is responsible for enforcing the law. The legislative branch is responsible for writing the law. And the judicial branch is responsible for interpreting the law. So why is it that our legislative branch of government, who doesn't look like the demographics or the changing demographics of the United States, are so bent on putting in policies that will take away the truth? You know, the one thing about it and what you say on your show on a day-to-day basis is this, man, the truth not only will it set you free, but the truth is the truth, man. You can't run from it.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, and it's always easier to remember it. But if you deny access of that truth to people, then therefore they don't know the story. And so when you, how do I put this, Phil? The best way I can put it, and I try to avoid analogies and you and I talk, but when you don't know or when you don't tell your story, somebody else will tell it or they'll make it up.
Yeah.
And so we got a lot of people making up stories in order to address the situations that we know are true. And so, you know, I think that has a lot to do with it. And it's an economic situation to it as well, because you're trying to hold on to generational wealth. And when people don't know about the positive contributions that people of color have made to this country, or even what they've gone through, then they believe that it's all hysteria. The best example I could give you is this, Phil. You know, I started off teaching African American studies at the junior high school that you and I both went to. You know, it's torn down now. Perkins is no longer there. But when I came back to Akron as a teacher, I was teaching African American studies. And so I had three peers of African American studies. And here's the thing that I found out, Phil, which was amazing to me. I had a few white students sprinkled into my classrooms who wanted to take the class and wanted to take the course. And other students were, you know, it was an elective class. And when I would tell them that the light bulb was invented by Lewis Latimer, he made the carbon filament to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
When I would tell them the first successful open heart surgery was done by Dr. Daniel Hale Williams. When I told them the wealthiest man who ever lived in the world was a gentleman by the name of Mansa Musa in the 1300s in West Africa. When I explained to them that Alexander Dumas wrote The Three Musketeers, which was classic English literature, what was amazing to me is the white students absorbed it. Like, wow, are you for real? I never knew this. And they wanted to go back and tell other people about it. But my African-American student population almost denied it. Like, Mr. Womack, that ain't true. If it was, then they would be teaching us that in all our social studies classes, or our history classes, or our engineering classes. And I'm like, wow. Yeah. So the people that it was meant to empower actually rejected it. Because there's like, there's no way that that can be true, Mr. Womack, was Dr. Womack now. Because if so, why are we finding it in our general education textbooks? And I was like, that's the whole point of it. To deny people access to knowledge itself is to deny them access to information. And that is what Dr. Ben was teaching us. A people without knowledge itself is like a tree without roots. You'll be blown away anywhere. And it amazed me, Phil, that the students who rejected it the most were the people who were learning about themselves because they had never heard. And that's what I worry about when we talk about critical race theory and the people who are in position to make policy and how that impacts not only our white population, but also our African-American population, because it's not being taught anywhere. But you can teach slavery, you can teach civil rights, but you can't teach things about what took place in regards to laws, policies, procedures. You know, it will impact the kids, and that's what I worry about the most.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What happens in the educational process when you begin to ban ideas and ban books? I mean, isn't that the start of a slippery slope?
Yeah, it's a step backwards, Bill. I believe that we as a people have to stand up united collectively in order to address the inequities, the inequalities, the policies that are taking place with the policymakers. I believe that our policymakers have gotten so far out of touch with their constituencies that they don't even care, because power, man, is, how do I put it? You used the term previously in regards to the effects of power, more so than even money.
Yeah.
But I think there is nothing more addictive than power.
Yeah, like,
and so those people, go ahead, Phil.
Well, I was just going to share, it came to mind as you were talking, I think the quote that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, something along those lines.
Absolutely. And so those people who are in a position of power who actually make the policies, which are making the laws, are so empowered that they don't even recognize the constituency. The example that I give you is this. I met a state legislator, I'm not going to mention his name,
mm-hmm.
who came to Canton, Ohio. He had three SUVs. Now, remember, this is just a state representative from a southern state who came to speak at a Southeast Community Center in Canton. He had three SUVs with Secret Service. For the most part, people didn't even know who he was.
Yeah.
But why do you have a brigade of three SUVs with Secret Service to come and talk to us for 30 minutes and many people didn't even know who you were? And my question that I asked him was very simply this. How do you stay in contact with the common man? How do you stay in contact with your constituencies? How do you find out what they want or what they are trying to do and what they are trying to accomplish? And his response to me was very simply this. Well, I go to my family reunions. Whoa, wait a minute. You represent an entire state and you get your information from your family reunion. They are so far removed from what goes on. And the quote that Dr. Savage once told me, my professor at Ashland University, is this: the people that touch the work know the work. The people who are making the policies in our country right now are so far removed from the day-to-day situations that are going on that, you know, they're just forming this based on an ideology that has really nothing to do with the people that are experiencing the effects of these policies. Mm-hmm. That's the best way I can put it.
I see. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Looking back, let's talk a little bit about the late, great Bob Marley, the reggae singer, on Bob Marley's album entitled Survival, which was released in 1979 with the Wailers, Bob Marley and the Wailers. One of the tracks on that album is called Babylon System. And in that song, Bob Marley sings these words. He says, "Tell the children the truth. Tell the children the truth." And in that sentence, in that refrain, he says that 8 times over and over again, "Tell the children the truth." So I was interviewing a polygraph examiner, a lie detector operator once, and I asked him, "What is the truth?" And he said to me, "The truth is what happened." So my question is, what's wrong with telling students, or anyone for that matter, the truth about what happened in this country? What could be wrong with the truth?
Bill, I think that question brings up another question. Why won't we tell the truth?
Yeah.
Who benefits from not telling the truth? You and I think have a solid foundation on what we agree is, hey, these are just the facts, and here's the truth. And there's a huge difference between facts and truth. For example, fact: Columbus discovered America in 1492. But we know that's not the truth, because there are already people here.
Right.
So if I knock on your door and find out that you are at home, I didn't discover your house. I just discovered that you were already here. That means you had already found it.
Yeah.
So the fact is, Columbus discovered America, but the truth is that there was already somebody here. So you didn't discover nothing, man. Somebody else had already discovered this. So there's a huge difference between facts and truth.
Yeah.
And so, you know, who benefits by telling this story, this narrative that they're trying to put out there right now in regards to banning CRT, banning certain books, banning certain situations? Who benefits from that? And I think that is the question that we have to ask. Who will benefit by banning critical race theory, first of all, and how are they using that as a platform? Because it's really propaganda, Phil. As I explained to you earlier when we started this interview, critical race theory is an epistemology or a foundation for dissertations based on legal foundations from Dr. Derek Bell and Dr. Kimberly Crenshaw. It has nothing to do with what they're talking about or what they're saying in regards to, well, we can't teach this, we can't teach that. It's a foundation based on there were laws, rules, policies, regulations put in place in this country that impacted indigenous and African-American people in a disproportionate way that did not help or support what they were trying to do. And so it's an epistemology. You use it as a foundation. That's not taught in a high school, 9th grade English class, a 6th grade class, a 12th grade class. Ain't nobody teaching that, Phil.
Yeah.
But they use it as a propaganda. And one of the things that I like about Malcolm X, and we talked about his quotes, is Malcolm X once said that the media is the most powerful influencer in the world. They have the ability to build you up one day and tear you down the next. And so who are the people that are telling the story? And he who tells the story first tells the story best. We don't have access to be able to change this narrative because we don't control the message. And he who controls the message controls the mind. And so therefore, I think that's what we see going on in our country right now. Bob Marley was right on point. Tell the truth, tell the truth, tell the truth. But who's truth?
Yeah.
And so that is something that we have to look at. But, you know, Bob Marley left here at a young age. And we remember Bob Marley not because he left at a young age, but because of what he was saying. And he was not just building that based on, hey, you against me. We as a people, in order to survive, there has never been a people, not the Romans, not the Greeks, not the Ethiopians, not the Egyptians, not the Portuguese, not the Dutch, not the British, as an empire that has been able to sustain themselves and be able to work collectively as a people for a significant amount of time, that continues not to take care of the elders, not to take care of the babies, and not to embrace the people who make up the metropolis, man. And I think that's what's going on in the United States right now. We as a power will continue to be threatened as long as we continue to tell one side of the story. And until we embrace everybody that's here and let everybody have a chance to tell their truth, then we as a people become weaker.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what Bob Marley was saying, tell the children the truth. Tell the children the truth. Because the kids will adapt and adjust and become malleable and do whatever they need to do, you know, feel. And if you tell the children, if you impact them with these untruths, then it makes it very difficult, man, for us as a society to continue to be the most powerful world or nation in the 21st century. And it's impacting us because we are becoming fractionized, you know, and that's a problem, man. That's a problem. And I hope that your listeners and you and I can sit down and have those type of discussions to figure out what can we do to bring us together. I mean, I think when they put the preamble together, we the people in order to form a more perfect union, establish pure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense. You know, when they put the preamble together to the Constitution, we the people, in order to form a more perfect union, who is we?
Yeah.
That's everybody, but we knew our founding fathers didn't include everybody. So if we are going to sustain the United States as we know it, and we're challenged on every side right now. Russia's at war with Ukraine. They're worrying about what China is going to do with Taiwan. We have a substantial amount of debt with China. You know, how do we come together collectively as a country just to say we are the United States? We are collectively, you know, the people who live here, regardless of where your place of origin is, in order to sustain what we have. And you cannot do that based on telling untruths.
Absolutely, I agree 100%. This is part B in our series of discussions with Dr. Sandy Womack Jr. This is a Black History Month short sojourn with Dr. Womack Jr., a continuation of our initial conversation. This also is a Light 'em Up After Dark special episode. As we continue here talking with Dr. Womack regarding CRT, we know from experience that justice comes to those that fight, not those that cry. What can we do to join in the fight?
You know, one of the things that I would say, Phil, is that ballot box was something else. There were so many people who fought and died, lost their lives, whether it be Medgar Evers or, you know, who lost his life in this fight for the right to vote. Ida B. Wells, who was beaten and abused, ordering to try to find people in Mississippi the right to vote and to be recognized as congressional Democratic Party. Whether it be Shirley Chisholm, who was the first first woman to actually run under a national party for presidency. You know, when you talk about that situation, one of the things I think we have to do is recognize that the powers in the people. The beauty about the democracy and the Constitution is the powers in the people. We have the ability to vote people into positions. And so if we don't take full advantage of it, but we have to become informed voters. And one of the things that I think is happening, Phil, and this is a little bit off the cuff, is this. I looked at the U.S. Census fact sheet in regards to Columbus and the average income for a family. It was $58,000. So many people are caught up with, how can I pay my gas? How can I pay my water? How can I pay my electric? How can I pay for gas in my car? How can I pay for the groceries that I need to eat? How can I pay for my apartment? How can I pay for my rent? How can I pay for my mortgage? You know, everything is going up. Inflation is unreal right now.
Yeah.
And so I believe people are so caught up with taking care of, as Maslow says, our survival needs, our basic needs, food, shelter, love, companionship, safety. You know, we are so caught up as a people with just trying to take care of Monday and get Monday to Friday and get Friday to Sunday and get January to February and February to March. We're so caught up with trying to take care of our own personal responsibility. Healthcare, prescription drug costs are going up. Housing costs are going up. Interest rates are going up. And so people are so caught up with living day to day. I think it was a statistic I saw in like 2019 that said the average income for an individual in the United States of America is like $35,000. So I have to go back on that and look. And as you start going with your researchers, look back on it.
Mm-hmm.
See, if you're making $35,000, you're taxed at like a 22 or 24% tax bracket. That means you're taking like one out of every $4. So how am I going to pay my gas, water, electric, cable, phone, food, pay for my rent, pay for my prescriptions, pay for, you know, a doctor visit? And I think what has happened is we are so caught up as a people, and the majority of people, because 1% of the population controls a large majority of the wealth. They're so far removed from what goes on a day-to-day basis. But if the people don't stand up united, one of the things I had a chance to do, and I thank you for asking this question, is when I was at Mount Union, Lech Walesa from Poland came and spoke at Mount Union.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, here's what we recognize in Poland. we could not defeat the Soviet Union, but we were doing a majority of their labor. So they sent the labor to Poland for them to produce whatever it was in manufacturing, whether it was textile, manufacturing, etc., and they sent it back to Russia. And he said what he did is he brought all of the people together to say, if we stop working, the impact that that will have on the economy of this other country will bring attention to us because we can't do it any other way. And I think until we start coming together collectively as people, recognize that the power is in the people. And I'm not telling people to protest and go here and go there and do this, but recognize that the power is in the people. Then we won't be able to make any type of significant change because the people who are making the policies, who are enforcing the policies, who are responsible for interpreting the laws are so far removed from what goes on a day-to-day basis and the average salary and things of that nature that they won't make any changes because it's not impacting them. You know, people ain't going to scratch if they're not going to scratch if it don't itch. They ain't going to laugh if they ain't tickled.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not impacting them, Phil.
No, for real.
So I think we have to find a way to bring attention to the masses who are working day to day trying to pay these bills. But, hey, you have the power, but you have to be able to show it in a way that's going to bring attention to those people that you've elected into these offices. And I don't know if we're doing a good job right now of finding leadership that's willing to do that.
Absolutely. How do we learn if there are any local or statewide initiatives to block CRT and perhaps join groups who are opposing them? How do we get that knowledge?
Well, you know, Phil, that's tough because he who controls the message controls the mind. And because the message has been presented in a certain way, we have to read. We have to look back into our history. We have to ask the right questions. We have to talk to our local legislators and ask them to define, like you're asking me to define. Define critical race theory and see what they have to say. We have to ask the right questions. We have to be willing to listen to what is going on. And I think that is the thing that we have to do, Phil. We have to ask the right questions of our legislators and recognize that our tax dollars actually pay them.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we forget, is that every state legislator, every national senator, congressman, everybody's salary comes off of tax dollars. That's coming off the working man. And until the working man recognizes that you cannot function as a government if you don't have my tax dollars, and recognize that you had the power to make a change, then Phil, we're going to continue to deal with what we got.
Yeah.
And, you know, shows like yours that bring attention to situations like this are definitely needed. Like, how do we get your message out to a much larger audience so that therefore we can start talking about what are the goals, the plans, the action steps, what is our full enforcement analysis, what is our desired outcome versus our current status, what forces are working for us, what forces are working against us, and how do we use those strategies in order to make change? Because I don't think that many of our legislators recognize that there's never been an empire that has sustained or survived when it didn't come together collectively. And when those in positions of power, just ask Napoleon about it. You know, France was the Great Britain of its time. France had land in every continent. And somewhere along the way, it became so corrupt that therefore it impacted their ability to sustain itself as a power.
Yeah.
That we become so corrupt as a government that we don't recognize that we are all here based on the people who are here and embrace it, then we too, you know, we'll fall, man.
Yeah.
And somebody else will become the national or the world power.
Yeah.
Who is that going to be? You know, and what does that look like? And it's unfortunate, but it says, united we stand, divided we fall. We the people, in order to form a more perfect union. Let's go back to what they put in the Constitution, regardless of the faults of our founding fathers. What they put together, man, was a solid document.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we gotta, as a people, we have to, like Dr. King said, we have to live out the promises that have been put down on paper into reality, you know, so
there
to speak.
You go.
And, you know, I read somewhere, if I recall correctly, that the way to end an empire is to attack it from within. And that's what we're looking at. You know, I mean, we're looking at, you know, attacks from within, you know, that are just going to crumble the whole process, you know.
Well, I think one of the things we've never come to grips with is that racism is not new. Dr. King was just assassinated in 1968. And all he was trying to do at that time was get equal pay for the Memphis sanitation workers. Let's just get that deep.
Yeah.
But he was also talking about the Vietnam War. He was also talking about economic empowerment. He was also talking about Operation Breadbasket. And at the time he was assassinated, man, he was one of the most vilified African Americans in this country. The FBI was looking so deep into him, man. It was crazy. Being the case, this man was assassinated just trying to get equal pay. And the equal pay was based on, I'm black, you're white, I'm going to pay you $2, you get $1 because of your race. Not that you wouldn't do the same job. You know, our history here in America in regards to addressing racism, man, is fairly new. It has been going on for a long time.
No, I know.
So, you know, until we start looking at how fresh that wound is and recognizing that we can't do this by ourselves, man, you know, in the Bible it talks about the principle of love. And somewhere along the way, man, I think we just stop loving each other, man, and we start looking at resources. And I think I love capitalism. I'm not going anywhere. You know, and I don't say I love it. I say I acknowledge it. But I recognize this, that we got to stand together collectively as a people to do what's best for the next generation. And Tupac, one of my favorite posts, said, if there is no hope for the youth, there is no hope for the future. The people in positions of power have to recognize that we're on the way out. These kids is on the way up. If we're going to have somebody that's going to sustain, support, and help us with our Social Security, our retirement benefits as we get older, then we got to raise the kids up to love each other, man.
Yeah.
And doing that, we got to be able to tell the truth. And if we don't tell the truth, then they're going to make it up. And if they make it up, man, it's going to continue to cause problems. And we as a country will continue to fall on the decline, man. I don't care what they say about technology, what's going on. If we don't learn to love each other collectively and tell each other stories and embrace each other's stories and imperfections, it's like a family reunion. Yeah, that's the uncle to drink. Yeah, that's the uncle and family member, the auntie that has the money. Yeah, that's the one who went to college. Yeah, that's the one that has some, you know, some shortcomings. Yeah, but it's all part of your family. Embrace it, man. Because collectively, y'all stand and you can make a significant impact. But individually, you can't do it. We is always greater than me. And somewhere along the way in this country, man, we forgot about we. We. You know, China got 1.3 billion people. India got 1.4 billion people. We got 330 million people in the United States of America, man. And they represent so many nationalities, so many different countries, so many different languages. And we are separating as opposed to coming together collectively under a united front. That's why we call the United States of America united. And somewhere along the way, feel it's just not happening that way, man. And unfortunately, I don't know if we had a leadership and positions in place to make that happen because we're so fractioned right now. You know, you said something when we first started doing these podcasts that I couldn't believe, but I watched it happen on January 6th.
Yeah. Yeah, and absolutely.
So, you know, how do we tell each other's stories so that therefore we recognize? I got a gas bill, just like white, Hispanic, Ethiopian, Somalian, Kenyan. Yeah, you're going to have a gas bill this month. I have a mortgage, just like white, Hispanic, Somalian, Asian, Nepali. Yeah, you're going to have it. You're in the United States. Man, I got daughters. I got sons. I got kids. I got health issues. We have more in common, man, than we do to separate us. But nobody's talking about the commonalities, man. And because we don't talk about the commonalities, man, they make up this story about all these differences. And people buy into it. When in fact, we all got a lot more in common. Man, I want my wife to love me just like you want your wife to love you. I want to have good health, man, whether I'm black, white, Chinese, Hispanic, whatever. Man, we want our families to be able to have opportunities. We got more commonalities than differences, and we focus on the differences. And that's because the people in position of authority focus on the differences.
Yeah.
We got red states and blue states. Man, what about the United States?
That's true. That's 100. That's a buck right there. This is a Black History Month short sojourn with Dr. Sandy Womack Jr. And tonight on this special episode, we've been discussing CRT and things related to that topic. Dr. Sandy Womack Jr. is the Region 3 Area Superintendent of the Columbus City School District, the largest district in the Buckeye State of Ohio, and a lifelong educator with 30 plus years of experience. Dr. Womack, we are so grateful to you, as we always are when we're blessed to have a chance to sit down and talk with you. Do us a favor, as you always do so eloquently, and close us out for this episode. Share with us your closing thoughts, and just know, like we always tell you, you always have a home here with us on Light 'Em Up. Anytime, our platform is your platform, And we're definitely going to put information out about your books in your closing. If you would share with us the titles of your books, and in our liner notes, we'll definitely add information where our listeners can find that information for themselves. So, Doc, we're grateful to you. We're thankful for your time. We know it's been a long day, and we just want to let you know how blessed we feel when we have an opportunity to talk with you.
You know, I really appreciate this platform, this opportunity to have these discussions. You know, the one thing I would say is we the people in order to form a more perfect union. It says we the people. As I said before, you know, we got red states and blue states, but what about the United States? Because in order for us to sustain and support the next generation of dudes, we can't just get caught up with, you know, white versus black. As Tupac said, the battle is good versus evil. And so how do we come together collectively in order to do that? In order to find out more information about the things that I'm doing, and thank you, Jill, for the platform, you could go to www.urbanschooleducation.com. A few of my books are Even the Best of Plan Goes Astray, The Leadership Manual to Creating Successful Urban Schools. My articles can be found in Principal Leadership Magazine, School Administrator Magazine, Ed Dive, etc. And all things Dr. Sandy Womack Jr., LinkedIn, Instagram, etc. And looking forward to any discussion, debate. As I said, my best friend used to always tell me, Sandy, you have to be open to all concern, criticisms, compliments, critiques, as well as conversation. And so I'm always open to all of that. And I just thank you, Phil, for the opportunity and what you're doing and what you're trying to spread out here, because, you know, somewhere along the way, man, we just got to learn to love. And I think we've lost that, man. I think we've lost that.
Hey, I want to thank my friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting. Their fresh squeezed hydrating green tea, loaded with amino acids and antioxidants, help replenish and neutralize skin for that natural glow. Want to know the best part? Their tea is organically grown and chosen for skincare from 3,301 Korean native green tea varieties. The winning 1-2-3 punch combination consists of the youth enhancing serum with black tea. Then you just dap a little bit of the eye serum underneath your eyes, and finally the enhancing cream. Oh my goodness. Like Muhammad Ali used to say, I'm pretty. I'm still pretty. They offer innovative beauty solutions for men, also powered by the finest natural ingredients responsibly sourced from Korea's pristine Jeju Island. Their proprietary extraction methods preserve the purity and potency of these wholesome ingredients from plant to bottle to your skin, offering advanced formulas that safely address all skin concerns without the use of harmful chemicals and preservatives. With the wonders of nature at the heart of Innisfree, they take care to preserve and protect the environment in all that they do. We want to thank our friends at Innisfree for their promotional products and underwriting of Light 'Em Up. Hey, don't forget to subscribe to us on YouTube and Instagram at Rizzo's Protective Group. We're very excited about being ranked 10th out of the top 35 criminal justice podcasts as ranked and listed by FeedSpot. Hey, don't forget to subscribe to FeedSpot at www.feedspot.com. And please, por favor, per favore, visit our friends at https://newsly.me. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up web articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them to you in a natural human voice. For the first time in the history of the internet, the entire web becomes listenable. You can browse articles from topics you choose and start playing. Hey, stop scrolling, start listening. You can follow any topic, as specific as you like, from sports, science, to Bitcoin. It'll find you the latest articles and read them to you. Hey, it's as easy as that. And to top it off, they have podcasts as well. Explore trending podcasts from over 50 countries. Our podcast, Light 'Em Up, is there too. I started using it as my default podcast app, and you can too. Download and use Newsly for free now from www.newsly.me or from the link in the podcast description liner notes, and use the promo code Light 'Em Up. And Light 'Em Up in this case is spelled L, the number 1, GHTEMUP. All one word. That's L, the number one, GHTEMUP. All one word.